podcast for my mother. She read to me when I was little, so now I'm returning the favour and you're welcome to listen along. It's Thursday and that means I'm reading something offbeat. Sundays are for classics, but whatever I'm reading, it's always great writing. Tonight, I am in Assyria, in about 650 BCE, at the Library of Nineveh, established by Ashurbanipal, the last great king of the Assyrian Empire. I am reading the world's first recorded recipe for making glass. But don't imagine it's a dry, boring chemical lesson. I would never do that to you. It's much more lyrical than that. The recipe is contained on a clay tablet, currently residing in the British Museum in London. It's archived, it's not on display, and I think that's a mistake. Think about glass. It's a vital, critical component of human history. Who doesn't love glass? So useful, so beautiful. So I think this clay tablet is an important element in our history. I think it's as important to us as the Rosetta Stone, and I think it should be displayed. Come on, British Museum, dust it off and get it out there on a pedestal for us all to enjoy. But that is just what I think, and I digress. The tablet was discovered by the Right Honourable Sir Austin Henry Layard, English explorer and writer extraordinaire, who discovered the library at Nineveh, as well as all those famous Assyrian bas-reliefs. You know, of the curly-bearded fellows with wings and fighting lions, head of a man, body of a bull, statues, that sort of thing. Sir Austin uncovered all those in the deserts of Iraq in 1845, and he wrote about it beautifully, but that is not for tonight's read. Although I will be covering Sir Austin soon, don't you worry, because he was amazing. Anyway, the library at Nineveh was filled with tablets, and one of them is in bits, but there's a fair bit of writing on it. And it took until 1925 to realise it was about glassmaking. In 1936, another tablet was decoded. It was also about glassmaking, and much older, from around 1000 BCE. Then, in 1970, Adolf Leo Oppenheim, one of the world's greatest Assyriologists, got together with the team at Corning. You know, the glassware people who make Pyrex. You probably have some Pyrex in your kitchen right now. Well, Leo got together with them to make glass using the ancient cuneiform recipe from Ashurbanipal's library. And it worked. Before I get to what I call Ashurbanipal's recipe for glass, how exactly do we make glass? The same way as in Ashurbanipal's day, actually. You take three ingredients and you fire them up in a kiln till they melt together into glass. Silica sand, which is regular old sand, beach sand, sodium carbonate, that's baking powder, basically, the ashes of plants that grow in high salt soil, or maybe ground down seashells, lots of salt in them. And calcium carbonate, which is basically ground up rocks, limestone, marble, chalk, that sort of thing. Now we know how glass is made, it all seems rather natural, doesn't it? Natural ingredients and heat, which leads me to wonder if glass can occur naturally. And the answer is yes. Volcanoes, lightning strikes, anywhere with massive heat and all the relevant ingredients, you will find natural glass. Obsidian is a version of natural glass. And if you think about it, the ancient world, Babylon, Assyria, well, that's desert country, even back then. There's a lot of sand, a lot of salty ash and ground up rocks, and a lot of relentless sun. It makes sense they would try to create their own glass, because I expect they saw it naturally around them, albeit in small quantities. And I expect, like the rest of us, they liked the smooth shininess of glass, which makes it so lovely. So if you didn't know already, that glass came from ancient Mesopotamia, you'd probably guess that that would be the spot after hearing about its ingredients. But that's enough modern chemistry. Let's hear how King Ashurbanipal understood glass to be made, in words that are 3,000 years old and not your average chemistry lesson. Let's begin. When you lay the foundations of a glass-making kiln, you search repeatedly for a suitable day during a favourable month, so that you may lay the foundations of the kiln. As soon as you complete the construction of the kiln, you set down Khubu demons in order that an outsider or stranger cannot enter. One who is impure cannot cross the Khubu demons' presence. You will need to constantly scatter aromatic offerings in their presence. On the day that you set down the fire stone within the kiln, you make a sheep sacrifice in the presence of the Khubu demons, and you set down a drink with juniper honey. You must then ignite a fire at the base of the kiln. The persons that you bring close to the kiln must be purified. Only then can you allow them to sit near and overlook the kiln. You burn wooden logs at the base of the kiln, including thick logs of poplar that are stripped and contain no knots. You may now set down glass within the kiln. If you want to make lapis lazuli, zaginduru glass, blue glass, you grind separately 10 minas of Imanaku stone, 15 mana of salicornia sand, and ashes of white plant. You mix these ingredients together and collect them in a clean crucible and set down the mixture in a cold kiln with four openings, placing it on top of a stand between the openings. The base of the crucible should not reach the bottom of the kiln. You burn a good smokeless fire. The fire should come forth from the openings, and when it melts your mixture, you extinguish it. You tear out the fire. When the kiln is cool, you remove the mixture and you grind it down. You collect it in a clean crucible. You set it down in a cold kiln chamber. You burn a good smokeless fire until the glass glows red without closing the door of the kiln. Only after the glass turns red do you close the door of the kiln. Then, when the mixture glows yellow, you stir it once in your direction. After the mixture has become yellow, you will transfer it to a new crucible, and once the glass is solid and out of the cold kiln, that which emerges is lapis lazuli, zaginduru glass, blue glass. And that's where we'll leave Ashurbanipal's recipe, but here is what Leo Oppenheim and the team at Corning had to say about it in 1970. The texts consist primarily of a few dozen fragments of tablets from the library of Ashurbanipal. During the decades that have elapsed since the tablets were first studied, many important advances have been made in Assyriology, and Professor Oppenheim has been able to take advantage of these in preparing his new translations. There are two major sources of difficulty encountered in interpreting the texts chemically. First, many of the tablets themselves are fragmentary, and thus evidence is missing. Secondly, the identifications of several of the ingredients called for by the instructions remain obscure, and it is obviously difficult to try to follow a recipe in which some of the ingredients are unknown. Despite these difficulties, however, and others, we believe we were able to demonstrate chemically that the texts are concerned with the manufacture of true glassy materials. Strictly speaking, we cannot claim absolute confidence in these conclusions as long as a significant number of ingredients remain unidentified, but we feel that the case is so strong that it can be stated with little reservation. The general schemes of the procedures described in the texts, as well as many of the details, makes sound glass-making sense. In fact, if one were to set out today to make small quantities of, let us say, a red or a green opaque glass in a backyard operation, the schemes proposed by the techs are just about what one with some glass-making experience would devise. Particular sections of the text are well preserved, and the ingredients can be identified with some confidence, and so they were selected for thorough study. We assumed that the Imanaku mineral could be approximated by quartzite pebbles. Having gained some confidence from the results of our calculations, we proceeded to test the instructions more directly. By using quartzite pebbles from Iran for the Imanaku stone and a sample of plant ash from Afghanistan, we followed out the directions given by the texts. After the first heating, 10 hours at 920 degrees Celsius, a frit was obtained which was then cooled, pulverized, and reheated in a crucible, as the texts tell us to do. The second heating was for 16 hours at 1100 degrees Celsius. The resulting product was a well-melted, homogeneous piece of transparent, pale bluish glass of very good quality. And that's where we'll leave it tonight. Leo Oppenheim and the Corning team confirming the validity of Usher Banipal's recipe for glass. How about that for a chemical recipe that's 3,000 years old? Be sure to build your kiln on the right day, keep your fire smokeless, and keep out those strangers and their prying eyes by sacrificing a sheep. There is nothing boring about that chemistry lesson. I think it's a charming scientific recipe from the ancient world, and I do love that the Assyriologist teamed up with the glassmaking company to test out King Ashurbanipal's bona fides. He got the Oppenheim Corning tick of approval all the way into the future, into 1970. I like to think that Ashurbanipal would find that very satisfying indeed. Okay, that's your lot. I'll be back on Sunday, 9 p.m. Sydney time, with a classic, and I wish you all a great and safe week wherever you are. I had fun learning about glass for tonight's episode, and I want to say that the inspiration for this episode came from a terrific YouTube channel, Max Miller's Tasting History. Well, actually, one of his drinking history episodes about glassware. So thanks, Max. If he's listening, or if anyone listening knows him, let him know that Nudie thanks him very much. Till next time then, folks, take care. It really is slippery out there. And thanks for listening to Nudie Reads.